Aprutyava Britam Yatra, Ganga Yumanaya Vita, Virajenatmana Sarve, Swam Samdhama Yayustata, Aplutya, taking a bath. Avavritam, the bath which is taken after performing sacrifices. Yatra, where? Ganga, the river Ganges. Yamunaya, by the river Yamuna. Anvita, mixed. Virajena, without infection. Atmana, by the mind. Sarve, all. Svam svam, their respective. Dhamma, abodes. Yayu, went. Tata, from there. Translation. My dear Vidura, carrier of bows and arrows, all the demigods who were performing the sacrifice took their bath at the confluence of the Ganges and Yamuna after completing the yajna performance. Such a bath is called avavrita snana. After thus becoming purified in heart, they departed for their respective abodes. Purport. After Lord Shiva and, previously, Daksha, left the arena of sacrifice, the sacrifice was not stopped. The sages went on for many years in order to satisfy the Supreme Lord. The sacrifice was not destroyed for one of Shiva and Daksha, and the sages went on with their activities. In other words, it may be assumed that if one does not worship the demigods, even up to Lord Shiva and Brahma, one can nonetheless satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.20. Kamais tais ter hritagyanaha, prapadyante nyadevataha. Persons who are impelled by lust and desire go to the demigods to derive some material benefit. Bhagavad Gita uses the very specific words nasti buddhihi, meaning persons who have lost their sense or intelligence. Only such persons care for demigods and want to derive material benefit from them. Of course, this does not mean that one should not show respect to the demigods, but there is no need to worship them. One who is honest may be faithful to the government, but he does not need to bribe the government servants. Bribery is illegal. One does not bribe a government servant, but that does not mean that one does not show him respect. Similarly, one who engages in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord does not need to worship any demigod, nor does he have any tendency to show disrespect to the demigods. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita 9.23, it is stated, Ye pyanya devata bhakta yajante shradhayan vita. The Lord says that anyone who worships the demigods is also worshiping him. But he is worshipping aviti purvakam, which means without following the regulative principles. The regulative principle is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Worship demigods may indirectly be worship of the Personality of Godhead, but it is not regulated. By worshipping the Supreme Lord, one automatically serves all the demigods, because they are parts and parcels of the whole. If one supplies water to the root of the tree, all the parts of the tree, such as the leaves and branches, are automatically satisfied. And if one supplies food to the stomach, all the limbs of the body, the hands, legs, fingers, etc., are nourished. Thus, by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can satisfy all the demigods. But by worshipping all the demigods, one does not completely worship the Supreme Lord. Therefore, worship of the demigods is irregular, and it is disrespectful to the scriptural injunctions. In this age of Kali, it is practically impossible to perform the Deva Yajna, or sacrifices to the demigods, As such, in this age, Srimad Bhagavatam recommends Kirtana Yajna, Yajnai Sankirtana Prayer, Yajanti Hi Sumedha Saha. Bhagavatam 11.5.32. In this age, the intelligent person completes the performance of all kinds of yajnas simply by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tasmin tushte jagat tushta. When Lord Vishnu is satisfied, all the demigods, who are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are satisfied. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth canto, second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Daksha Curses Lord Shiva. So being brought out here is this element that the worship of the Supreme Lord is not dependent upon the demigods. So we see here is that this yajna that they were performing, though Shiva and Daksha were present, in the beginning when they left, it didn't stop the sacrifice. Because actually the Vedic principle is that one should worship Lord Vishnu. That is being brought out again and again. That is the principle. Anything else is not, like in the previous purport. If such activities are performed for personal satisfaction, one is involved in prashanda, or atheism. But when they are performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, one is following the Vedic principle. Right? So the Vedic principle is that it's connected to the Lord. That's the point. The Vedas work on principle. You have a principle, and that's being followed, then you've actually obtained what the Vedas are describing, what they are trying to establish. If that's not, then it's actually technically not Vedic, because it missed the principle. It's atheistic, right? So we see that the Varnashram Dharma is also described as Sanatan Dharma. In other words, Sanatan means that it's eternal, so that means it's connected to the Supreme Lord. So the whole Vedic system means it's connected to the Supreme Lord. If it's not connected to the Supreme Lord, technically it's not Vedic. Right? Just as if we say what we would consider not Vedic, if it's connected to the Lord, then it's obtaining that principle in which the Vedas are trying to establish. In the same way as what appears to be Vedic, if it's not actually for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, technically it's not Vedic. Right? Otherwise, smartas are as Vedic as you get. But they're atheists, because it's not the Supreme Lord. Because Sanatan means always. So here we see the term is used irregular. Because it's only when you have a desire that they're going to worship them. You have a desire, you worship. You don't have a desire, you don't worship. So that's naimittic, it's not nitya. So it's not sanatana, it's not eternal. So that's against the principles. Naimittic elements of the nitya can be performed. You're always worshiping the Lord, you're always chanting the holy name, you're always trying to please Him. So then there's occasional ways that you please Him. On top of that, every day we're chanting, every day we're doing all kinds of activities. But occasionally then you celebrate Krishna's appearance, or you celebrate Julan or Chandan Yatra or these things. So that also is following the principle. It's connected to the Lord. And so it's not irregular. But these others are irregular because they're not actually serving the Supreme Lord. So that is the basis. That it's that simple. It's connected to Krishna, it's good. It's not connected to Krishna, it's not good. So if you ever want to know how to define good and bad, this is the Vedic principle. Connected to Krishna, good. Not connected to Krishna, not good. And anybody who gives a different definition means, in other words, a definition that opposes this is Pashandi, atheistic. It's simple. That's the problem with the Vedas. It's so simple that a child can understand it. At the same time as that simplicity can be described in so many ways that it becomes extremely sophisticated that we will say, oh, this is so philosophical, or this is over our head, or this or that. That's why it's perfect. All contradictions are reconciled in the Supreme Lord. So the Vedas are about the Lord, therefore they're also perfect. That's why they're followed. So the most complex points in the philosophy can be explained that simply. And the most simple points in the philosophy can be explained in a very sophisticated way. So here we see is the sages who actually understood the Vedas. Then even though Daksha and Shiva left and their followers, still they carried on the sacrifice. Because they knew the worship of the Supreme Lord, that's what you're trying to do. That's the purpose of life. So they were able to carry on. Otherwise, then one would think, oh, this can't be carried on. Smarta couldn't carry on because all the elements seemingly are not there. But the sages knew, yes, everything is there. Worship of the Supreme is there, therefore it'll work. Shiva and Daksha don't want to be here and worship the Lord. Fine, they're going to continue on. Right? So then it works. You know, we're not saying here Shiva's not worshiping. He just left so that there won't be any further disturbance in the sacrifice. But Daksha is not getting any benefit on any platform here. Right? Unless you like goat heads, of course. Then you got a lot of benefits. You know, you got a very nice high-grade goat head. Right? I'm sure they didn't use a second-grade goat head. They used a good goat head. He's a Prajapati, of course. So it's very simple. You worship the Lord, everything works. You don't worship the Lord, it doesn't actually matter what you do. No matter how good it is, Vedically, modernly, it's all useless. Right? That's why people don't understand Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Right? Because those who are strict followers of the Vedas, then if it's Vedic in any way, shape, or form, it's perfect. Whether it's about the Lord or not, they don't care. Right? And the modern is, they also actually don't care about the Lord as long as it follows modern norms of social structure that they personally feel comfortable with. So both have missed the point. So the Gaudiya is, all they care, is it connected to Krishna? Then it's perfect. If it's not connected to Krishna, no matter how wonderful or how many people jump up and down and say it's wonderful or the little tweets and that saying great, it doesn't matter. It's just nonsense. Because ultimately here, the whole material world is just to show us or provide a facility for us to go back to Godhead. That's all it is. It's nothing more. Since we are in the habit of being here and we take things seriously here, then we will take involvement in the material pastimes as serious and we'll try to connect them to the Lord. Right? We'll have inspiration, we'll do something. Right? Because if we don't have love for Krishna, what's going to be the drive? Right? You only get a result if you perform an activity. You only perform an activity if you want a result. Right? You only want a result if you're inspired. You have some understanding of the field. You have some identification with the field. So if that's Krishna, that's the best. Why bother with anything else? But if it's not, at least one is active. Right? What did Prabhupada say about who joins the temple? He said, no lazies, no crazies. Why? Because the chit potency functions with knowledge and activity. So if you're not active and you're not using your intelligence, then you can't actually do really much of use for Krishna. Maybe take prasad, okay, Haribol. But other than that, that's it. Right? So no lazies, no crazies. Why? Because these two categories of persons are unable to really dynamically be involved in activity. And if you're not engaged in activity, you'll get no result. So now, if there's no result, what do you offer to Krishna? Therefore, one's conditioned nature is taken as seriously as it makes one involved in doing an activity that can be done for Krishna. That's the importance of varnashram. That's the importance of duties and social positions and political correctness or whatever it is that makes you, gets your bile moving and gets you out of bed in the morning. But that's where it ends. If it's not connected to Krishna, then it's a waste of yours and everybody else in the universe's time. Because you're doing nonsense, Maya does have to arrange for it. So you're wasting a lot of people's time. Simple. So simple that it's a slap in the face. Oh, so rough, so harsh. Can't you say it more sweetly? Oh, yes. May you pleasantly preserve yourself in the material world eternally like some flower potpourri. Like that. If that makes someone feel any better, go to hell in a, very comfortable bucket, and the ride should be enjoyable, yes, like that, and so, then everyone, oh, so nice, yes, isn't he a nice man? So niceness is okay if people are nice, but the only thing nice in the material world, if you're not connecting it to Krishna, is actually only the inherent qualities in the soul. Right? And those are misdirected itself. Like truth is one of the inherent, there's seven qualities that the soul has, no matter what their conditioning is. Truth is one of them. Like nowadays, it's a big thing. Oh, truth is truth. They didn't tell me the truth. No, you won't speak the truth. Like this, that truth. But it's not connected to Krishna, so it's absolutely useless. But it keeps them going because that compassion. Oh, you must be compassionate to everybody else, but not to this guy. So like this, there are the seven qualities. And so only because those bleed through the conditioning does it even appear that the modern culture even has any shred of any usefulness to it. Otherwise, it's totally useless. The Vedic here, if it's not connected to Krishna, becomes useless. So basically, if we can understand that that is the criteria, it's connected to Krishna, it's valuable. It's not connected to Krishna, it has no value whatsoever. I mean, at all. Even if your friends think it does, it still doesn't. Then we'll have actually learned, the core principle that the Bhagavatam is trying to teach us. Always remember Krishna, never forget. That means if it's connected to Krishna, it's useful. It's not connected to Krishna, it's useless. Any questions?
Everything is connected with the Lord, either materially or spiritually. Could you kindly elaborate on this saying of the means justify the ends?
The means justifies the ends if everything's connected to Krishna. See, the thing is your means might be connected to Krishna, your end might be connected to Krishna, but is your means and end connected to each other? You know what I'm saying? If I think, okay, I'm going to make this nice potato sabji, and I get out a 5-pound hammer and start smashing all the potatoes into like flat pieces of paper, and then I say, what are you doing? Well, I'm doing for Krishna. The means justifies the ends. One will say that's simplistic and stupid, but actually if you look at what others are doing, only because their emotions are involved, it looks like it might have something there. But if you look at it without emotion, it's just as stupid. Because if you look at it, who in history has said this, and who has ever gotten it? They've never gotten it. Because the action generates a specific result. And that you may, out of your sentiment, think, I can do anything. But you're only doing anything because of your emotion. See, that's the problem in this modern atheistic culture, is if a feeling is there, right? Because we're trying to define ourselves separately from dead matter, right? That we're alive, right? Get a life, I want to live, I want to feel, I want to experience. So all it is if you experience something, that's taken as truth. So now there is an element there because that feeling, that value is Krishna. But since you don't know it, then like it says here, it's still atheistic. It's still Prashandi. Prashanda atheism. You know, or what was it? What did they see here? Avidipur Bakam. It's against the rule because it's supposed to be Krishna. So, if the problem comes is that people have a feeling, and anything that will increase that feeling, they actually think is getting the external physical result. But generally, if you see it, it's not, because it's one, it's not connected to Krishna. Two, it's not even connected to the laws of God, which are nicely explained in the Vedas, but are available anywhere if one is observant. So, not connecting it to God, not following God's laws, the only actual motive or drive to an activity is the feeling you'll get from it, or feeling you're getting during it. You know, we're working for the greenies, we're out there in our boat, and we're going to stop that big, you know, tanker there from going and destroying our environment, you know, and as the tanker runs them over and they sink and drown, then there was some feeling, you know, that wrath towards them, we'll stop them, we'll, you know, this and that, but did it work? So you can say the means justify the end. Well, at least they did something, but what did they do? They felt something. They didn't actually accomplish anything. So we can see is that the whole point comes down, if I feel, then that's all right. That's what the modern philosophy dictates.
So Maharaj, in a process of...
you understand the point? So the point is that that's the problem with anything, whatever, the ends justify the means, because what you're doing here is trying to intellectually cover up that what you're doing is simply out of emotion. It has actually nothing to do with practical reality of action and reaction. But because people, otherwise why would you say that? It would be very obvious. You know, the water's boiling, I dropped the potato inside. Do I have to say, the ends justify the means, Prabhu? You know, why? What are you trying to do? You know, you're trying to, you know, grow that potato? You know, it's obvious. So people only say it when it's very obvious that what they're doing has nothing to do with the result they're trying to get. So they'll say that because then it will cover intellectually and bring it to the emotional platform that, yes, that's true, because feeling of emotion is all I care about. So that's what people do. So therefore people will say anything, do anything, and then when afterwards you pull them up on that or point out it's wrong, they'll say, oh yes, I'm sorry, I was just trying to do this, or you know, or another thing, oh, you don't understand, because it's all about emotion. It has nothing to do with getting anything done other than experiencing that emotion. Because even what they want to do, oh, I was only trying to do this. Why are they trying to do this? So they can experience that emotion. That's all.
Somebody can argue that the emotion is to please the spiritual master, and therefore...
Sorry?
The argument could be given that in my effort to please my spiritual master, I'm doing that. My intention, sincerely, is to please the spiritual master, whatever is the argument.
Okay, it means we may sincerely be trying to please the spiritual master, but still, I'm saying is that if the foundation for that is simply sentiment that's not based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then it's not actually good enough. That element that you want to please, that's good. You know, it's just like, you know, the crack dealer also wants to please his customer because he'll come back and buy more from him. But is that good? You know, so in principle, trying to please him, that's good. It's sacrifice, is that element. You know, the guy doesn't put that much, you know, chalk powder in his cocaine, because otherwise then the quality would be lower than the guy on the next block over, and then he'll get all the business. So it sacrifices there, but one has to see is that sacrifice for Krishna? So ultimately, these things, though they seem very important, at the end of the day they have no meaning. Because otherwise, why are there the things of being able to cooperate? Why are the elements there that there's regulation, that there's shastric injunctions how to do things? You know what I'm saying? It's so we can see is that if someone feels like it, but they felt like that, oh, they felt this way, then everybody goes, oh yes, that's solid evidence in a court of law. But if you go, here facts, oh, well, they're just covering up, or they're meaning this, or they're doing that, you always try to turn it into somebody's emotion. It's only emotional. There is no intelligence here. There is no logic. There is no Shastra. There is no Krishna.
You know what I'm saying? So if the person's actually sincere, he'll try. But then when he's shown something better, he'll take it. But if he demands to stay in his condition, you know, avoiding those things, you know, and not being able to be progressive, then it's not actually sincere. So one has to actually see, what is the purpose? You know, is it to create an identity? Is it to get a result for themselves? Is it just an experience? So we're not saying that there's a problem in experience, because devotional service is all about experience. Rasa means experience. But what we're talking here is that the problem is that experience, so we shouldn't think experience is bad. No, experience is good, but that experience should be connected to Krishna. You're in the kirtan's nice, you have a really good experience, that's good. Then you'll think, you'll chant, you know, you associate with devotees, you like that, that's good. You know, you take prasadam, you study the scripture, that's good. So experience is what we're trying to get, but we're so attached to the mundane that we will fight tooth and nail, and we will break every rule, every etiquette, every anything, just to maintain that feelings that we have, and we've decided that this is what I want or need in my heart. And that is, here, prashandi, atheism. You know what I'm saying? The point is, in other words, where we're Krishna conscious, that's Krishna conscious. Where we're not Krishna conscious, it's atheism. You know? But Prabhupada uses it here. Atheism means it's not theistic. It's then theism means it's about God. So when it's God conscious, it's theistic. When it's not God conscious, it's atheistic. Simple. So that's the point, is that one has to see that those connections are actually there. Otherwise, the talk brings out a feeling, which is good, especially if it's towards Krishna, but you have to see that that talk and the action work. You know what I'm saying? Like before, we had, around Prabhupada's festival. You know, everyone got together and fired up, and so many plans and this and that, but I don't really think any of the plans ever happened, but everyone felt good about getting together and talking about Prabhupada and making plans connected to Prabhupada. So in that way it was good, but what I'm saying is that it didn't actually touch reality, in that you could see it in the form and material cause, because operational cause other than talk wasn't there. You know what I'm saying? So it's nice. If that's all the more one can do, then that's great. But then don't use one's authority if one can't do anything. You know what I mean? In other words, kids sit around and talk about all kinds of things. Great. But they're only kids. So we have to be very, very careful, as this end justify the means, is that you have to actually be able to back it up and show it scientifically. Otherwise, why get so complicated? It sounds big philosophy, so then pull out your philosophy and explain it. But if it simply comes back to a sentiment and a shouting match, then it falls short. Otherwise, it's a very dangerous thing. People just say, they have these little one-liners that seem to work throughout history because they play on people's sentiment or people's shyness and all that. When people say these things, you say, explain it. You know, say, well, it's Yukta Vairagya Prabhu, how? Was for the Lord. How is it for the Lord? Show me. Convince me. Then, hey, I'll do it. But people are hoping that by saying these things, you won't ask a question, because generally speaking, they don't have an answer. And generally speaking, they're even afraid of the answer. Right? Because fear is a symptom of ignorance. And if one's fearless, one's situated in devotional service. Does that make sense? So one is, conditioning is very strong. We're very practiced at it. We've been here since time immemorial. And so we're quite good at it, you know, or quite good at being overwhelmed by it. So it's natural, it will take time for that to go away. And so if we're determined and try, then slowly, slowly it will go away. Even when we make mistakes, that doesn't matter. So the problem is it's not a matter of who's the victim, so therefore their mistakes don't matter. That's just modern nonsense. Who's the victim? You know, what do you mean? The point is that how are we trying to please Krishna? Right? That's the real thing. Otherwise, you can spend all day arguing over who's the victim. If you want to see something funny on this, there's a set of books called Politically Correct Bedtime Stories. Like that. You can find them online. This one guy, you know, from New York, thought it very amusing, the political correctness. So he went and made all the bedtimes, because a lot of them are incorrect. You know, I mean, it's like here, you have going and all different things. So he has that, all these elements, and he redefines them, you know. So, you know, Little Red Riding Hood is taking these, organic, homemade, you know, cookies to the grandmother and everything. But unfortunately, while she's going through the forest, then she's picking some, very rare flowers like that. So the forester is getting so disturbed that how is it that she's ravaging the environment simply for her own personal sentiments, selfish sentiments towards her grandmother. And so then when they go there, and then the wolf, then, you know, he swallows, you know, the grandmother and this and that. And then the forest guy comes to the, you know, to the rescue. And then at the end of the story, he kills Little Red Riding Hood because, you know, the wolf, that's what he does. What can you do? He's a victim of his own circumstance, you know. Society makes him like this, so he has to eat people and that. But how is a Little Red Riding Hood who was picking, you know, very rare flowers that might go extinct? And if you read it, I mean, every story is like this, every last one. Hansel, when you get old, you want to be killed? Like that, Papa talks about. I think there's some culture somewhere in the world, some more tribal culture, Aboriginal culture, when the man gets too old that he can't do anything, then they bring him out into the, you know, whatever it is in their village, the public place, and then all the young guys, then they, have a sport, you know, killing him like that. And then after, I think they eat him, you know. But that's, you know, it's part of their culture. You know, so no one goes to waste, you know. I think Eskimos do that. They don't eat them. But I think they just put them out somewhere to freeze to death, you know, stuff like that. So if that's the way they want to work, then why not? There's plenty of space on the North Pole for sentimentality and compassion. Okay, how do you mean acting from sentiment or from compassion? Compassion means that there's a kindness being extended to another living entity that, you know, would be in need of something. Right? They need some help or support, and you're extending that. Sentimentality, it means, so that could also be sentimental in that you're doing it because it's good and nice, but you don't actually know why it's good. Sentiment basically means you don't actually know why you're doing it. That's sentiment. Like something has sentimental value. It's just that it itself doesn't mean much. You know, it's some cheap thing. It's a little plastic bracelet that somebody gave you from a box of Cracker Jacks. But, you know, you still have it 30 years later because that was the first thing they ever gave you. You know, that kind of thing. So the it's not that it's that valuable in that way. It has emotional value. So sentiment means the emotional value is there, but you can't really necessarily explain beyond that. So sentimentality and compassion have been mixed kind of in the modern situation. At the same time as then you have those who aren't sentimental are not compassionate. So that's the thing about why Vaishnavism is actually hard to understand, is because you're compassionate but not sentimental. You know, because people who are sentimental are compassionate, people who aren't sentimental tend to not be compassionate. So the thing is you have a standard, you judge by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, you see the situation that is there, the individual involved, but the situation has to be seen, how does it involve others, how is it connected to others? You know, and so to that degree, that's a consideration, right? Then you show the compassion, what's right at the time, what's correct at the time. you show compassion what's correct at the time. You know, because in one situation, compassion may be one. Just like, let's say, Kanchipa Rasa, its basic quality is compassion. Right? That's why then Lord Chaitanya, taking, you know, this sentiment needs to be connected to Krishna. And that sentiment's already connected. You know, so just be able to see how that works, the map of the functioning of sentiment, that's where there's less intelligence. Not on the, but unscrupulous people, like we were saying, the clever people who like to cheat the kids, they'll misuse this to take advantage. And they'll say, oh, that means academic. It doesn't mean that. You know what I'm saying? That's not what it means. That may be true or not, but there's plenty of men who are not very sharp either. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? So one has to be able to see is sentiment isn't enough. It's a nice start. Okay, you want to see that in this case the women aren't taken advantage of. Nice. But then do it in a way that actually has benefit, because by taking those things out of the book, then you're removing the thing from the adult that what's wrong is the kid won't understand what you're doing. That's why you're taking advantage. So actually the principle on which a relation is going to be based is not there. So you won't have that camaraderie and that in all your material activities, and that there'll be the husband is guru when it comes to these spiritual things. You're trying to level the field that it's all the same, and therefore you can't tell the difference between a man and a woman. So that means you're actually becoming less intelligent, not more. They're thinking we're intelligent, therefore we have to make everything the same. But intelligence is being able to tell what is the difference and what is the same. You can do both. If you're only doing one or the other, there's a problem. If you only see things the same or only things different, there's something wrong with you. You have to be able to see both. So this modern purviews is it's sentiment. But you can also be Vedically very sentimental also because of the religious aspect. Because religion generates emotion. Right, so you can be very sentimental about that. But at least then it's pious, it's uplifting, it's progressive. But unless it's connected to Krishna, still useless. But at least there is in progression between hell and, you know, Brahman, it's farther towards Brahman and less towards hell. While the modern liberal is probably, you know, how you say, courting with the devil. Yes, means you have to just see as impersonal means ultimately you don't even actually have impersonal. Because the reason that you are impersonal is for very personal reasons. You know what I'm saying? The material world has been very bad experience, so you want to get rid of experience. So it's personally motivated. You know, so the devotees ignore each other and are rough and this and that. Actually, you're dealing with individuals. The problem's personal, not impersonal. We'll say, oh, the devotees are so impersonal. No, it's because they're individuals, that's the problem. If they actually were impersonal, does the pillar bother you? You walk by every day and why it looks at me like that? How come it never talks to me, you know? So it ignores me like I'm not even here. You know, it's like, does anybody say that? No. So it's not actually impersonal. That's the problem. It's the personal that's the problem. So that personal is farther away from God consciousness. Because progressive towards God consciousness, there must be some element of sacrifice. That's why the liberals look so good, because there's the element of sacrifice. Right? But at the same time, is that same element of sacrifice as in the conservatives, because their thing is you know, the individual is not considered for the greater good of the state. You know, in the rules of the state. So they're also considering others, but in an institutional way. You know what I'm saying? The liberal is trying to be individual, but ultimately they're non-different. It's just two sides of the same coin. They're trying to claim they're not the same coin. You know, the heads are saying the tails are out of it, and the tails are saying the head's out of it. They're one coin. Does that make sense? So that's why one always brings whatever emotions and sentiments one has back to Guru Sadhu and Shastra. then it's strong. Otherwise, it can be weak. You know, and one can get distracted. So to avoid getting distracted, then one should, it means, in other words, if it's important to you, why not learn more about it? But there's a feeling knowledge will destroy the emotion. But that's only if the emotion's based on ignorance. And it's just like this, is that, let's say you have a favorite pair of shoes, okay? Now, you really like these shoes. Why? They're comfortable, they're attractive, they're practical, there's some quality there. And so by that quality being manifest, they become very attractive. So why is it, let's say, if the parents understand the philosophy behind the parent-child relationship, just because they understand that, the relationship with the child will get less? Because the interaction with the child, still those qualities that are attracting them about interacting with their child are still going to remain. But now they can see their action in connection to Krishna when before they weren't. And that quality they're looking for is Krishna when before they think it's the child. The dead matter is cute. No, Krishna's cute. And then he gives part of that cuteness to kids. Right? Because otherwise, if they're cute, why when they get older, they're not cute? Okay, Pretty Boy Floyd was an exception. But other than him, they're not cute. What part are the scriptures referring to intelligence?
What aspect? Aspect,
what we're saying is when the scriptures are talking about intelligence, the main point is being able to discriminate between matter and spirit, right? You're absorbed in matter, you're in the material world. You're absorbed in spirit, you're out of the material world, right? If you can tell the difference between spirit and devotion to that spirit, then that gets you into the spiritual world and leaves you in Brahman. So discriminating between matter and spirit, you know, God, Chit Achit Ishwar, God, the living entity, material energy, that is intelligence. So that's what we're talking about. Because other things, one can look at it in either way, intelligent, not intelligent, but it's just like this. The man is all that means the country is being controlled by outside forces, and so all the men get together and let's free ourselves from this. And the women say, just, you know, what's the problem? You know, someone else runs the country. Sit home and grow your potatoes. You know, don't worry about it, right? And that the men get all fired up and go out and have their war, and they come back dead. So now, who is more intelligent? The woman or the man? So in other words, if our personal life is not disturbed by whoever's, what do we care? So only if our personal life is disturbed, then there's war. You understand? Because emotions can't be experienced. You understand? So it's not a problem. Emotions cannot be properly experienced. You know, they're getting in the way of that. So therefore, then that's a problem. Right, you know, they take all your family and take them down to the local shower, and after you have your shower, you're all dead. That's a problem. So you want to remove that. But, you know, who's in charge and who cares? Lord Chaitanya, they were all here, and the Muslims were in charge. They didn't really care, as long as they could perform their duties. Only when he stopped the Sankirtan, then there was a problem. But before that, did you ever hear of any problem? After that, did you hear of any problem? No, who cared? Now, that whole time, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, the Muslims were in control. Even when he's at Puri and all, they're in control. Rupa and Sanatan weren't leaving Nawab Hussein Shah's service because he was a Muslim. It's just that they saw time being spent in material life is over. Now it's time to get, you know, they just wanted to go to Vrindavan. You know, so if he was a Hindu, they still would have left. And so the discrimination between matter and spirit, that's the point. You understand? Because the feminine mentality is so intertwined with energy, right? So the feminine mentality here is the Purusha Shakti. It's feminine, but it has a masculine overtone. Right? It wants to control for its own pleasure rather than the spirituals. It wants to control for Krishna's pleasure. That's the difference between the internal and the external. So therefore, that feminine quality is a problem. But in the spiritual world, that's considered the greatest ornament. So therefore, the top rasas are exclusively held by women. Right? The gopis are women. Right? There's no cross dressers or any of these kind of It's just they're women. And in the parental ras, the women are the prominent. The men are in the background. You hear about Nanda Baba, but do you hear about any other men? Basically speaking, never. Sometimes they get a mention, but they're not part of the pastime. It's the women. Yes, the option is always there, matter and spirit. Yes. That's the point. So that makes it so. Now here, give an example. So therefore, if we're looking at it, men are more intelligent than women, taking that position, then, but according to what we've defined, does that mean the man comes home, expects the wife's going to serve him because she's been all day working, and he's not noticing that she also worked all day in, taking care of the house. So he got the money for the house, so she used it in the house. So now, it's a matter of, they've both done their duties to establish the environment in which they, as a husband and wife, can interact. So when the husband comes home after work, that means now is the time to interact. Not for him to sit back and say, well, I worked all day, now I should be served. What has that got to do with lesson? What has that got to do with it? Where does that come from? Women must be submissive. So what's that got to be? So when you're giving a Bhagavatam class, people in the audience are supposed to be submissive. So, So what is that? What has it got to do? It's simply the masculine fantasy of what they would actually like, their life to be in connection with women. It has nothing to do with reality. That's why it says, Lord Chaitanya says, worse than associating with women are associating with men attached to women. Because those men who claim that the women are less intelligent, and that's their position of masculinity, those kind of men are considered worse association than women. So they're even worse. Because if they are so unintelligent, if you're so smart, why would you associate with them? Right? In fact, that's why the wife is submissive to a good husband, because she can't figure out for beans why he is so nice to her. And he's consistent, and he's dutiful, and he's always there no matter how crazy they are, no matter what they're going through, they're always there. So they're submissive because it doesn't make sense. Why would anybody be submissive to them? It's what they want, but why would anyone do it? So that's what makes the man superior. The wife's doing what she does because she can't do something else. But the man is working for that support because he can do something. He could work for himself without women. Or if he's going to be involved, he has to work for them. That's what they can't do. Not consistently. They can do it here and there, but consistently, day in, day out, consistently. Beings always be there for the woman. Because the woman is saying, you've done something nice, she's right there and all chirpy and all that. But if, they're feeling bad about something, then they can completely ignore you. So what's wrong? They don't want to talk. And if you try to talk, they get angry with you. But the man is always consistently, emotionally the same. You understand? So all these things in the scriptures are being misread because they don't actually understand what is rasa, what is relationship, what is masculine and feminine. And because of that, they don't understand. And then they come up with all these so-called modern concepts. The concept of men and women doing school together and everything together, that's Plato. Plato. When was Plato? What BC? 100 BC, 1000 BC? About 100 BC. So then that puts it over 2,000 years old. Now, if that is not old and archaic and, then why is it Vaishnava? We're talking about things Lord Chaitanya did 500 years ago, and we'll say, oh, that's old-fashioned, that's archaic. So why isn't Plato's concept of men and women going to school together archaic. But we'll quote it and say, oh, this is the modern thing. So that's the point. Modern think is simply what some particular group of people who are espousing it agree on. There's particular sentiments, that's all. That's why I say a sentiment has nothing to do with reality. But that was Plato's idea. Right? That's where you get the Platonic relationship. Was men and women could be in an environment and have a Platonic relationship. It's when Freud, it's Plato, it's just they work together and it doesn't matter if they were men or women or otherwise. So it's very idyllic, nice. But the idea works in the spiritual world. The material world doesn't work quite as good. Right? Somebody's very, very trained in the Vedic culture, then it can work to some degree. You know? But if they're not trained in the Vedic culture, it's not really going to work. Yes, I mean, if you don't mind, if you're not shy.
Hare Krishna. I'm not sure how to put the question, but during the lecture you before the 9 o'clock, you mentioned how even when we debate about something, we should always have some etiquette. And so I have a cluster of questions in my mind that, okay, sometimes you debate the point, but the other persons or the other party does not follow the etiquette in debating. In other words, they may not stick to the point, they may use different logical fallacies, or you means I may feel that unless I'm loud enough, even decibel-wise,
yeah, that works.
He won't be
when
heard.
We say here shouting, I mean an emotional response. I don't what I was saying is that somebody you make a comment and somebody starts yelling, it's only emotional. It's not it's just an attack on the person's individual character, and that's all. There's nothing more than that. And the attack actually doesn't have anything to do with the conversation. It's just something to somehow or another stop you. But if they don't respond, they don't follow etiquette, you have to talk loudly, then you do it. But we see from Prabhupada, the main thing that annoys such people and that they can't handle is you stick to the point. You know, like you notice even in purports, Prabhupada, if you read the purports without the verses, you'll see one straight flow of presentation. The verses may start talking about all kinds of things, but the purports go in the same flow. Because there's a certain purpose. So the real thing in argument is know exactly what is your thesis and be able to actually understand what the other person's thesis is. If you can do that, then you stick to that only. And so when they try to go into something else, you bring it back. You know, like Prabhupada, you know, thou shalt not kill. Yes, but, and then go off into something else. No, but it says, thou shalt not kill. And he would go on that, and it really, really, really annoys these people, especially if they're speculators. They hate it because for them the movement from one intellectual idea to another is their pleasure. So when you won't let it move, it's to them it's the most painful thing. So when they move something, you say, okay, that's very nice what you said about all that, and we're glad to have heard, you know, your opinion about the person's, you know, management 30 years ago and when he did that. But right now, you know, 2010, we're talking about this. Then they won't have something to say. Because they've already exploded. You know, unless now they explode and walk out of the room, like, you know, like Daksha did or something, you know, so then... You know, saying you just stick to your point. So then they'll leave, and then everybody. Then you talk to everybody else. Can't convince them. Convince everybody else. The problem is they're in the room. They're having influence on everybody else. Now they've left the room. Now you convince everybody else. Does that make sense? So in other words, if you know your point and stick to your point, that is your strongest thing. Because no matter what happens, you just wait. In other words, you don't have to even respond to what they're saying. You just carry on with a conversation, even as if they hadn't even said anything. You know? Oh, it's good to see, you know, you don't have laryngitis, and your voice is very full and all that, but on the point in reality, then, you know, this is what we're discussing. You know, it's good to know that you can shout loud. Maybe you should, you know, try leading kirtan or something. You know, you wouldn't need a mic, you know, for Hari Nam and all that. But in reality, this is, you know, you just keep bringing it back to the point, whatever it is, depending on the situation. You either be very nice, you be a little bit, you know, sarcastic, whatever it is, but you bring it back to the point. You know, you can say things what they are. The best is if you can say what it is without any, without any emotional, or your own attachments. You know, you see Prabhupada say, it's rascaldom. It is. So like you're saying, it's atheistic. So we can say, it's atheistic, this is not theistic. We won't say, you're an atheist. Because then you're identifying the person that the soul's never an atheist. They get covered by it. You know, so it's atheism, but it's not that they're an atheist. So you avoid those emotional kind of things of the personal attack on, you know, their identity. But if you stick it to what's being done, what are the moods behind it, what it's trying to go, is their actual understanding of the field of activities correct? Are they considering everything? Okay, if you're considering only this, it's great, but if you're considering everything else, you know, you're considering you and your friends on email, that means you at this city, him at that city, and that, then maybe it has something to do with reality, but we have 400 centers in the society. And so it doesn't apply to anybody else. So why for 3 centers should we have a resolution that doesn't have anything to do with anybody else? You know, on a value system that absolutely no one else in the world even cares about. You know, that's one of the most painful things, is that many times most of the world couldn't care less what the first world thinks. They really just don't care. It's painful for the first world to think that such a thing exists. You know, like, I remember it was the first time I noticed this. You know, this concept is, you know, because from America, you speak English. You know, everybody speaks English, or if they don't, they want to speak English like that. And I was talking something, I gave an example of something in South America. You know, because, you know, people, you know, try to speak English, that. And then the South American boys just said, no, actually, we couldn't care less about English. We like Spanish better. It's more expressive, and, you know, you can express the emotion, and the gringo's language isn't actually that good at getting across the point. So we would rather speak Spanish. We only speak English because it's an English environment. You have to speak it. But otherwise, if it was our choice, we'd speak Spanish. I'm not sure that officially more people speak Spanish than English, you know, as a language, you know, like that, you know, as country languages and stuff like that. You know, it's picking up, you know, like that, it's popular in certain ways, but it's not, you know what I'm saying? So these kind of things is, we tend to get conditioned and think that the rest of the world actually is likes the first world mentality. They may like first world facilities, but I don't think anybody outside the first world likes first world mentality. They really just don't. And even within the first world, there's the divisions of who they consider, you know, cultured or not. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, if you just stick to your point, then you slowly, slowly break through all this kind of stuff. And then you'll be respected for sticking to your point. Especially if you can do it without being overwhelmed by emotion. You know, meaning in a reactionary way. Then it's, you know, it's there, and then people are careful about what they say. They can't just say anything. You know, and so then what they'll do is they'll have a subcommittee meeting where you're not invited, and then they'll decide their things, because then you can't make a comment.
It's a point with relevance to always referring to Shastra and Guru.
Sanskrit.
Yeah. You're always, you know, the point of always connecting it then with Krishna. But in devotional life, there's one thing personally I find very difficult to handle, is when actually that's used in such a way where it's manipulated in such a way where it's for the personal benefit.
In other words, that's what we were talking about.
Yeah. If say for instance, you know, you hear it quite often with new Baptists, you know, their little Bacta leader says, don't do this, you know, this so and so. And they say, Krishna's do Bhagavan. They're being facetious, you know, Krishna's in charge. They're ignoring what they're saying. You know, it's a bit of an insidious way, it's using Krishna as an excuse for their misdemeanor or for their correction. And, you know, or whether you say you follow rhythmic philosophy, and they use Prabhupada's arguments, and will the ISKCON as it is now, they use their points. But somehow it's that Shastra is being twisted by some sort of either mental concoction or a personal motivation.
But what's the point?
Yeah.
What is the point? Because we've already said that one has to be careful of this. So what's your point? What are you adding to this?
No, the point is, from my point of view, is how do I know from my point of view that I'm not in some way, you know, they say we have this cheating propensity within us.
Okay. How do we know we're not cheating?
Yeah. And when those, you know, maybe that you're asking to do service, that they also use this way to cover their misdemeanors or whatever.
Yeah, but the point is what's the problem? Is the misdemeanor, okay, someone is covering their misdemeanors, what's the real problem? What will be the real problem with them covering their misdemeanors?
What, in such a way to justify what they've done?
Okay, if you're justifying what you've done, so what's the problem with that?
Yeah, well, it's either... The point is that I found, you know, say maybe from personal point of view...
No, not examples.
It leads to offenses.
It leads to offenses.
Yeah.
Okay. But why is it leading to offenses?
If there's some exchange, because...
There's an exchange, but,
yeah.
But what's the problem in the basis of this exchange?
Well, the offenses get deeper or more...
Offenses get deeper, but so what's the problem with offenses? What's the problem with offenses getting deeper? Why is that a problem?
It impedes spiritual life.
Okay, and then what's the problem? Why is it a problem to impede spiritual life?
Well, our goal is to connect with Krishna.
To connect with Krishna. So
yeah.
That's the answer that you're looking for on all the questions I asked before. So the problem in covering the misdemeanors is not that the misdemeanors are a problem, it's that the problem is that the distraction from Krishna. You understand? Because we take it the misdemeanor actually has value, but it's like, how important is a mirage? You know what I'm saying? He has a good mirage, or he has a bad mirage. You know, like that. You know, so the thing is, it's illusion. You understand? So, therefore, this kind of illusion, that doesn't really matter. The problem is illusion. So that's what the Bhagavatam does, is distinguishes reality from illusion. So, and that reality is Krishna. An illusion is, means it's not connected to Krishna. So even if it's nice, it's not connected to Krishna. It's useless. And even if it's not nice, if it's connected to Krishna, there's some value there. But what's not nice about it, it's going to create a reaction. So that should be dealt with. That's why there's etiquette. That's why there's all these things. So that what is not good about the connection to Krishna is rectified. But no matter how nice it is and wonderful and lovey-dovey and considerate and compassionate and kind and all that, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's just very pleasant uselessness. It doesn't stand on its own like that. So the point is if you're being engaged in a service and the service is bona fide and it is your service and the person's inspiring to do that service, even though they may be covering up their own weaknesses in the process or establishing their own authority or position, you'll still get the benefit from doing the service. Even if they're not pure, it doesn't matter. You know, the copper is pure or not, the electricity still flows. So we're wanting to connect to chit potency, it's flowing through them, we're doing fine. They'll have the one with the problem, that individual element, that's what they have to work on their own spiritual life. That's their problem. That's why we don't worry about the authority. But that principle is, the authority applies it, the general devotee applies it. It's the same principle. You know, I only use it in relationship to the concept of authority because nowadays everybody thinks they're a big authority. You know, and they'll pull something out of the hat of some modern concept on how that makes them an authority. You know, I'm older, or, you know, I've been around longer, or I'm from this part of the world, or I have a PhD, or I'm a mom, or, you know, I'm a Prabhupada disciple, or, you know, something they'll pull out of the hat, you know, to try to establish, you know, okay, great, but what's that got to do with going back to Godhead? It can, but it doesn't, it's not automatic. That's the point. That's why I kept asking, but what's the real thing, you know? Does that make sense? So if you take it back to that, then there's a lot less problems. Because the real problem, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the only shortage is God consciousness. That's the only thing missing. Otherwise, everything's there. You got plenty of smart people doing all kinds of things. You know, it's like,